The structure of perturbation theory in an interacting 5 to the 4 quantum field theory, looking at the, give you some idea of what is the general structure of perturbation theory and how functional integration can be used to do calculation in this framework. So remember that at the end of last lecture, I wrote the action for a full interacting quantum field theory with a scalar field, I x, and with an, the simplest interaction term. The simplest interaction term we can write, which is a term corresponding to a 5 to the 4 interaction. So we should describe, in fact, a local interaction between two particles, two quanta of the field. So the action for this model in the Euclidean space-time, because that's simpler, but I showed you how you can rewrite the action in Minkowski space-time, is just the integral over the whole Euclidean space-time of, there is a term involving the derivative of the field, d mu phi squared, I write it like that, plus a term which is the same term than the free field, so m is some mass, and then there is a phi 4. Okay, so that's the free, that's the term of the free, and that's the interaction. Okay. And for some reason, in fact, it will be convenient to normalize what I call this constant G by dividing it by factorial of 4, which is 24. It will be convenient, it's arbitrary. So G is what is called the coupling constant. It measures the strength of the interaction, local interaction between particles. And of course, it has to be positive because it has to cost energy to the system. So the energy of the system has to increase if you have several bosons, several particles at the same place. Because if you were gaining energy, losing energy, then the system will collapse because phi describes excitation which are bosonic. Okay. And so what we are interested now in is in computing expectation values of products of let me call this Z for some reason that's so I am interested in operators which are time order products of field operator at various positions in space-time. Here I am back in the Minkowski space-time. And I am interested into the matrix element of those operators, into the vacuum of the theory, and I will denote this vacuum as the standard equation omega, because this is the vacuum state, of the interacting theory. Okay. We later on we shall treat this as a perturbation of the free theory, but we have different actions. So those are two theories: the free theory and the theory with an interaction have a different Hamiltonian. They have, in fact, they don't live. The states don't live in the same Hilbert space, and therefore the lowest energy state, the vacuum state, is a different state for the free theory and for the interacting theory. Okay. And I think you have seen this already in the lecture by Kostia Zaramil. Okay, so our purpose is we want to be able to compute, at least in some approximation, these building blocks of the theory. Okay. So, as usual, I will go from Minkowski to Euclidean space because it's more convenient for the calculation. But all what I've been doing, I will be doing this today, you can repeat it in a Minkowskian framework. Okay. So I will be interested into computing in the Minkowski framework. That's the same, Z1, Zn, okay. And so by a weak rotation, from this I can obtain this, or if I know how to compute this, I know how to compute this. So now this Z are points in Minkowski spacetime, so in R4, and from the general principle of path integral formulation, path integral formulation, I expect this to be given simply by the expectation value of those objects considered as random variables in ensemble where the probability to have a field configuration phi is given by the exponential of minus its action. So therefore, this is nothing but some integral over those field configuration times the products of what we are interested in times exponential of minus 1 over h bar SE of pi. Okay, and it's an expectation value, so it has to be normalized so that the expectation value of the operator 1, of the observable 1, is 1, so this has to be divided by exponential of minus 1 over SE of pi. Yes? Pardon? Yeah, I am using here, I'm computing something in the Euclidean framework. So I am using the Euclidean action and the way which I wrote here. Here M is R4. Yes. Okay. And if you want to compute this directly in Minkowski space, then you have to take as M Minkowski space. But then there is a minus sign. Here there is a minus sign. And here there is a factor. Instead of minus 1 over h bar, there is factor 1 over I h bar. Remember? Usual rule. Okay? So I am interested in computing this object. And the problem is that those integrals are no more Gaussian integrals. Because this action is not anymore a functional of the field phi, which is quadratic in phi, degree. There is a more complicated term. So you cannot use directly the rule of Gaussian integration to compute in the functional integral framework this quantity. Okay. But here comes perturbation theory, and the idea is simply that you can rewrite, for instance, let us consider this object, this one, the numerator. The numerator, you can rewrite it simply as I will write that later, so let us take this and rewrite it as an integral over d phi, phi of z1, phi of zn. And I separate this term and this term, so I write this as exponential of minus 1 over h bar, g divided by this normalization factorial of 4, the integral over d4x of phi 4 of x. Okay? And then I write exponential of minus 1 over h bar times the remaining term here, which I will denote simply by S naught of phi, okay, which is the action for the free field. Okay? So you see that, in fact, you may consider this integral as the integration of this observable with this probability weight, or you want to evaluate this object with this weight, which is the weight associated to the free theory. In fact, the idea is quite similar to what you have been doing in canonical quantization. And therefore, you see that, in fact, you can rewrite this as a ratio of expectation value of some observable in the free theory. And this is simply, in the numerator, I write this as phi of z1, phi of zn times exponential of minus g over h bar factorial of 4 times integral d for x of x. Okay? And I'm computing this in the free theory. So this means that, in fact, now I am computing this more complicated object now replacing the vacuum of the interacting theory, which is a very complicated quantum state, by the vacuum of the free theory, which is a simpler, much simpler quantum state. So, yes? No, I have not written yet the denominator. So in fact, I should have handled that, of course. And in the denominator, I have to compute the same object, but without the observable I was interested in, d for x, I for x, okay, and okay. So those two quantities are simply expectation values in the vacuum state of the free theory, where the Kuprick constant is set to zero. Okay? And for those quantities, we may use the Wick theorem, because we know how to compute expectation values of products of fields in the free theory. That's what we did yesterday, and that's what we have been doing with Kostia Zarembo in the canonical formulation. So, in order to do that, of course, that's still a complicated object. So, what we want to do is to do perturbation theory. Perturbation theory means expand in a series in powers of the coupling constant G. So basically, this means that you assume that the coupling constant is small. Okay? And that's very easy to do because, of course, you know how to expand an exponential. And at the end, this object here, so you have to compute objects like that, which this object here, let me write it, this object, if I do it naively, I can rewrite this as by expanding the exponential as a power series in G, and I can rewrite it naively as a sum from k equals 0 to infinity. I have a factor minus g 1 over 4
over h bar factorial 4 to the power k. I have a 1 over factorial k because I am expanding an exponential. And then I have something which is the exponential, the expectation value of phi times this object. And I can rewrite this as dx1 dxk, the expectation value of the products of the fields I was interested, times the phi 4 of x1 times the phi 4 of xn. And I'm computing the expectation value of this product of operator in the free theory. Okay? So that's the basic idea of perturbation theory, which, and basically that's, I'm doing exactly the same expansion that you have been doing in canonical quantization. Simply, I consider that those expectation values are defined by using a functional integral formalism. But those are the same object. Okay? Is it clear? Okay. So this seems straightforward, but in fact, there are several highly non-trivial steps I have been doing. You see? When doing that, first, I have been inverting, you know, here you have the average, and here you have an exponential. So here I have been inverting the average of a free field and the sum of a k, gk, something. You see? So I have a series of something, and then I make an average. So I make a very big integration over an enormous space of field configuration. But basically, this is a sum over field configuration, and this is a series in GK. And you know in mathematics that usually, when you have complicated integrals or complicated sums, you cannot always change the order of the sign. And in fact, this inversion, so it's in fact not an inversion, but interverting. This average over the fields and this sum, this is in fact highly non-trivial. And there are a lot of mathematical problems connected to this inversion. But for the moment, we shall not discuss that. Okay? The second problem I've been doing is that, in addition, you see, here I have been inverting, then I have been inverting the average over the free field and the integration over the x. Yes?
Commuting the order of the sum.
I am commuting the order of the sum. Here, you see, first, I am summing the series to define an exponential for a given field configuration, and then I am averaging over the field configuration to get the expectation value. Here, I am first averaging over the field, so making a sum of a field configuration, and then I am summing. And here is the same thing. Here, I have first an integral over the position of the field, and then I'm averaging over the field. And here, I have doing the opposite. First, I am averaging over the field configuration for a given position of the phi 4, and then I am integrating over the phi 4. Okay? And in fact, this point also is trivial, because in fact it's not at all obvious that the integral of this object is convergent. So in fact, this intervention would lead to what is called ultraviolet divergences, because the integral over x is in fact not always convergent, and in fact it's almost always non-convergent. And this will lead to problems because the series in G is not a convergent series anymore. The series expansion of an exponential is always convergent for any value. But series expansion in quantum theory and in quantum field theory are in general not convergent, but they are asymptotic in some sense, so they are summable. Usually you can still build out what you want out of them, but you have a lot of problems. And those two problems, the problem of the summability of the theory and the problem of the existence of ultraviolet divergence, are not just technical mathematical details. Not just that we are physicists, or we don't really have to care about whether the integral is how is it convergent. They are related to deep physical issues in the definition of quantum physics. So there is physics behind those two interventions. Yes?
So why does the divergence of these things depend on whether we invert them or not?
Well, I will discuss that later, at least for perturbation fault, for this ultraviolet divergence, the divergence of the integral of the fixed system. But I prefer not to say more. I just want remember yourself that there are problems. It's not an innocent step to do that.
But the problems are not there before we switch the order.
They are not?
Are the problems there before? I thought the problems were just there.
Yes.
But do they actually arise just in this step when we invert things?
I think so, yes. Well, but you can understand what's going on by understanding some physical aspects of quantum physics. But I prefer not to say. I just wanted to warn you that this is the steps that everyone is doing, including myself, but it's a non-trivial step. Okay. So up to now, we shall be interested in computing this object. Okay. And now we have to compute. To compute the expectation value on the vacuum state of the free theory, we have a product sum operator. And now we can apply Wick's theorem. And that's what you have been doing. So simply now you have to make pairing between all the different files you have here. You get a sum of contribution, you get a sum of products of propagator, and with some, in fact, you get, and then you have to integrate over that. And then I think the best way is to show some pictures, because first you have already calculated similar things in the quantum field theory course, and I want to show you the global picture of what's going on, without going into the exact details of how do you do the calculation, because those are exercises. So, let me show you what's going on here. Can we, yes, thank you. I forgot my. So, stop here. So I'm seeing the beamer. Thank you. Okay. So first, this is a reminder of what the Wick theorem is. Oh my God. In a very bad position. So here is a reminder of the Wick theorem, which allows you to compute what is in terms of the expectation value of the product of two field operators, phi x1, phi x2. This is a diagrammatic way to represent the product of four phi operators in terms of three different pairings, and here is explicitly the list of the 15 different pairings which are possible to give you the expectation value of a product of 6 fields. Okay? Okay, so now we are interested in computing this object. So you see, this object, oh, I'm sorry, here of course there is no, there are no, you see, now I want to compute an expectation value in the free theory of a product of, here I have n field at the some external points which are fixed because that's the, in, that's the observable. This is the observable I am interested here. And here I have a product of k phi 4 fields. So I have in fact here n, what I will call external points. Z1, Zn, fixed. And I have k internal points, internals to what we explain, x1, xk. And I integrate over these points. Okay? Because here you have an integration. And of course, you have in the total n plus 2k, plus 4k phi operators or variables. Okay? So, let me give you a few examples of what are the Feynman diagrams which appears in the interacting theory. So first, of course, remember in the denominator, we have to compute this object when n equals 0. You have no field, but you still have to expand the exponential. So first, you have a series of diagrams which appears because you have to compute the integral over the products, the expectation value of phi 4. And when you apply the Wick theorem, you obtain the following contribution. Because you have, in fact, the product of a propagator at the same point, x1. So this is one two-point function, one propagator, and this is the second propagator. So I represent simply phi squared of x squared by this object. This is a diagrammatic representation of the products of two propagators at the same point. Okay? And you obtain this. And in fact, if you count the number of way and you count the fact there is a 1 over factorial 4, you get a factor which is 1 over 8 here. Okay, now let us compute the products of 2, phi 4, the expectation value of the product of 2, phi 4 at two different points. And it becomes more complicated, but applying Wick's theorem, you get three different kinds of terms. A term like that, which is where in fact which is the square of these projects at the two different points, because you apply Wick's theorem in between simply those four operators or those four operators here, so you get a contribution which is proportional to this times this. And you get other contribution which come when you apply Wick's theorem, which is some of the phi here and some of the phi here. And here, here is the contribution when you have when you have two pairings between the different points. And here is the contribution when you have four pairings. Okay? And if you count that at the end, you have this combinatorial factor which counts how many way you obtain this contribution by applying Wick's theorem. Okay? So those diagrams with no external points are called vacuum diagrams for a reason which will be clear later. Okay? And you see that among those diagrams are a bit special because they are what is called connected, you know. And this diagram is disconnected. It's made out of two pieces. And since you integrate over the position, the contribution of this disconnected diagram is just the product of the contribution of this connected diagram and of this connected diagram. While contribution of those diagrams is non-trivial because you have to integrate both over x1 and over x2. and that's it. Okay. In this contribution, you have to integrate over the position of all those internal points, those internal what's called vertices, the diagram. Okay? So now let us continue a little bit. First, remember, where does this factor 1 over 8 came from? It means because, in fact, when you apply the Vick theorem, you start by the phi 4. In fact, you have to, in some sense, label. This is the French word for labeling. You have to consider that, for example, that you have 4, so you label one of the phi 1, the first one, second, 3, 4. You apply the Vick theorem, and here are the three possible contractions. And at the end, since the contribution doesn't depend on the labeling of the fields, I get three times the same contribution. Therefore, this 1 over 8 is 3 divided by factorial of 4. But why did I have a factorial of 4? Factorial of 4 is the total number of different labeling of these vertices, because you can label the legs of this vertex in factorial 4 different ways, because it's just by permutation of the labeling. And the 3 here is the number of inequivalent labeling of the legs of the vertex you are getting at the end. So you see that the 1 over 8 is just the number of inequivalent labeling of these diagrams, which are represented here, divided by the total number of labelings, possible labelings of the legs of the vertex. And there is a famous but simple result of group theory, which is called the class formula, open any books and find a group, which tells you that the ratio of the total number of labelings of an object divided by the total number of inequivalent labelings of the object is equal to the number of equivalent labelings of the object. By equivalent labelings, I mean that, for instance, consider this object and assume that, for instance, I interchange 1 and 2, and I interchange 3 and 4 at the same time. Then, in fact, I'm getting exactly the same diagram, because I'm getting instead of having 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm getting 2, 1, 3, 4. But you see that 1 is always connected to 2, and 3 is always connected to 4. So in fact, this labeling is the same labeling than this one. Why here, 1 is connected to 4 instead of being connected to 2. Okay? And the number of equivalent labeling, so the number basically of permutation of those of the place of those numbers, which leaves this diagram unchanged, is called, they form a group. Permutation of labelings which do not change the diagram, it's a group, it's called the symmetry group of the graph G. G is just this diagram. And therefore, there is a factor 1 over 8 because there is a symmetry group of labelings of the legs of these diagrams which leaves the diagram invariant. And these groups, in that case, has a number of elements 8. Okay. So in fact, there is combinatorial argument and group theory behind those French factors. Yes?
If you just exchange 1 and 2,
yes.
And the diagram, does the diagram the same?
Yes. So if I exchange 1 and 2, the diagram is the same because that's 4, 3. You see? Because then 1 is always connected to 2 and 3 is always connected. But now if I exchange 1 and 3, you see, I get this one, which is different. You see? So, and in fact, why is there an 8? That's because I can exchange 1 and 2. I can exchange 3 and 4, independently of 1 and 2. But I can also exchange, as a rule, 1 and 2 together with 3 and 4. So I can. I take 1 and 2, I cut them down, and 3 and 4, I cut them up. So in fact, the group for this graph is very simple. The group is the group Z2 times Z2 times Z2. And the order of this group is, of course, 8 because it's 2 to the power of 3. So it's a very simple example. But if you have understood this example, basically you have understood everything. But of course, you have to practice. Okay. So now, let us consider the more complicated object, which is an object where I have two external points. So I'm computing the expectation value of phi of z1, phi of z2. So n equal 2, and the first term in this series is the series where k equals 0. So this is just the expectation value of the product of two fields in the free theory. So it's given by the propagator, the things we computed last time. Okay, now let us consider the next term, n equal 2, k equal 1, so there is a 5-4 terms, and now if I apply the Dick theorem, I can make a pairing between this point, and then pairings between this, and then I get this diagram, which is one propagator of the free theory and the vacuum diagram I discussed previously. And then I have another contribution where I can get pair phi here with one of the phi here with one of the phi here, and I get a contribution which is given by this kind of diagram, you see. And so, and then of course I have to pair the remaining two phi in between, so I get something like that, you see. So I get two different contributions, one given by this, the products of propagator represented by this diagram, and one given by product of propagator represented by this diagram. And here, if you pay attention, you see that those points, which are called vertices in the language of the diagram, those points are white points, you know, and they represent, in fact, just the points z1 and z2. So they are labeled by 1 and 2. While these points, which is a bullet, the black bullet, represent the point x1 we integrate over in space. So when you have a diagram like that, it means that you take the products of the propagator represented by the lines at the position represented by the point, and whenever you have a black point, it means that you have to integrate over the position in that point. But when you have a white point here, a little circle, it means that it refers to these external points. You don't integrate over because they are just characteristic of the observable we are interested in. Okay, so here it's quite simple. But you still see now something different. You see also that this diagram is connected, this diagram is connected, and this diagram is disconnected. Therefore, it's a product of this integral times this integral. Okay? So let us now continue. If you play a little bit at second order, now you have two 5-4 operators, and the list becomes more complicated, and here are the different diagrams you can contribute. So the different contributions which come out in the calculation of this expectation value using Vick's theorem, and in this contribution, remember, you have to integrate over the position of the black bullets, and you don't have to integrate over the position of the external points z1, z2. Here are the combinatorial factors, okay? And in this diagram, in fact, you have three connected diagrams, and the remaining kind of contribution come from disconnected diagrams, so therefore they factorize into contribution, the contribution of propagators times the contribution of the vacuum diagram, and the contribution of the two-point diagram we have I have shown before, times the contribution of this vacuum diagram. So the new diagrams and the new amplitude, the new integrals you have to compute at that stage are given by this three diagram only. Okay? So let us continue. Four-point diagram. Now I'm interested in 4 points. And then at order k equals 0, I apply V theorem, and I get the three contributions we discussed yesterday. Now, I look at the term of first order in G, so there is now 5-4 of x1, and I integrate over x1. I apply the Vick's theorem, and I get those contributions. You see, the black dot represents this 5-4 vertex. The white dots represent the four external operators. You get a series of contributions with some combinatorial factor. But among those contributions, of course, there is only one new interesting contribution, which is a connected one, which is given by these terms, where each phi associated to an external point is paired with one of the phi here. Okay, so those terms correspond to things we have already seen before, and this is the new term which comes out. Yes? Yes, so this diagram is completely connected because all the external points are connected, and in addition, all the internal vertices are connected to the external vertices. Later on, we will see that you may have diagram where all the external vertices are connected by lines, but still you have disconnected. At that order, it doesn't exist because this is the first diagram which connects all the external points. Okay? And so in fact we are interested in those contributions which are called the connected diagrams. And the corresponding, if you keep only in this calculation the contribution coming to this diagram, you are computing what is called connected correlation functions. So instead of that, you can compute connected correlation function if you sum only about the contribution coming from those kind of connected diagrams. Okay. So now let us look a little bit at what is the structure of the connected diagram. So now I consider only the red connected vacuum diagram I have considered before. In the 5-4 series, there is something very simple. If you consider the vacuum diagram, the diagram with no external vertices, all the vacuum diagrams are not connected, but here are the connected vacuum. So there is something I will discuss later, which is represented by a circle with no vertex, but this is the first connected vacuum diagram, and here are the two connected diagrams we had at second order. Now, if I consider the two-point function, it turns out that all the connected two-point function, all the diagrams are, there is a propagator, there is this diagram, and here are the three diagrams I represented. And now there is something else. You see that among those diagrams, some are particular because some are made out of a piece like that, or pieces like that, which are more connected than general. You see that, for instance, this diagram is a chain of little pieces connected by this, by propagators. This is a part which is connected to the external lines by propagator. And what is special to those diagrams I have represented with a blue part? It's that they are called one particle or one line. I'm sorry, I should have written this here. These diagrams are called, the blue diagrams are called one particle irreducible. So among the connected diagrams, some part of the diagrams are special. They are called one particle irreducible because if you cut a line, they remain connected. You know? Here, if I cut a line, I get something which has just one vertex here, which is connected. If I cut a line here, I get something with this and this, which is connected. But if I cut this diagram, the whole diagram is not irreducible because if I cut this line here, I remove this line, I get a disconnected diagram with two disconnected pieces. You see, so among the connected diagrams, there are some special sub-diagrams which are called the one-particle irreducible diagrams, and they will play a special role in the following. Okay, so let us continue. I showed you what was going on for the two-point function, for the four-point function. So here is the four-point function. Show you. So now this is the diagram which interests when I compute the expectation value of phi 4 and I have removed the vacuum diagrams, and then here is the connected part, the only connected diagram of the four-point function. And if I consider now the connected diagrams which are present in the four-point function, at first order in G, here it is. And if you go to second order in G, you have a bunch of diagrams with two vertices because you have a term of order G squared. So here are the diagrams. And among those diagrams, you see that here are what I call the irreducible part of the diagram. It's a single vertex, which you can consider an irreducible part. Here is this diagram I considered before, the vertex, it's a combination. And here, there is a new irreducible diagram, something interesting. It's the diagram made out of two vertices connected by two lines. So this is a new irreducible part, which appears at order G squared. You see? Yes?
A endpoint function and a connected endpoint function. Like, what is the different thing that they describe?
Okay, so the connected, the general endpoint function describes just what I call what I showed up. Please don't switch off the beam. Oh, okay. Okay, the endpoint functions give you this quantity. So, for instance, what I showed before in the four-point function, where all the diagrams which come out when you compute the expectation value in the interacting theory of four operators. And here you had a series of diagrams. Here you had also a series of disconnected vacuum diagrams. And in fact, it turns out that all the vacuum diagrams cancel between the numerator and the denominator. I will explain that a bit later. Okay? And in the connected part is something slightly, it's the part which is obtained once you remove the disconnected. So in fact, for instance, if you have two operators, phi, phi, the connected part is equal to the two-point function. But if you consider the four, you can write it in terms of a product of 4 plus 4. So there are three contributions. Okay, and then you have the remaining part. You call it the connected endpoint function.
So these things describe something physical, right? They describe something similar to the
problem. This describes something physical. This doesn't describe something physical in the quantum theory, but it's related to it describes the non-trivial interacting part here. Yes?
You want to think about cluster decomposition, really. So
pardon?
It's cluster decomposition.
Cluster
decomposition is the difference between connected and full Green functions.
Yes.
So connected Green's function, you pull the sources apart the wrong way, then
yes.
The whole thing, all the correlations die.
Yes. Yes, so it corresponds to something called cluster decomposition in mathematics and in statistical physics and also in energy, but I'm a bit less familiar with that.
So the connected two-point function, you could also subtract off the square.
Oh, that's because, in fact, here, remember, I'm considering the phi 4 theory where phi equals to 0 by pi. So if we were in a theory where the potential would have an odd part, then the connected part would be this minus phi part. Phi would have been different. Okay.
So which is the more physical thing?
Pardon?
Which is the more physical thing?
I think, well, it depends. I think the more physical thing is this quantity. But because you can relate it directly to things, to, for instance, amplitudes you observe in experiments, in collision experiments. But this reflects, you know, give you indication about what part of the quantum correlation in the system are not contained in the two-point correlation. So So they measure, it's also physical, it's measure more collective effects. So these are simple collective effects. It measures what are the quantum correlations between two different positions in space-time. And this measure what are the more collective quantum correlations, not contained simply in the correlation between two different effects. So I presume that, for instance, if you go back to good old ordinary quantum theory and you ask about the properties of entanglement and quantum correlation in system with more than two particles, but three particles and four particles, I think that you can relate some properties, I don't know, of GHZ states or things like that to those quantities. I'm not sure, but I have the feeling that. So it contains physical information. Everything is physics in this calculation. Okay, so let's continue. Ah, okay, thank you. Yes, but I'm not sure it will control this my computer. But okay, but I can use it as a laser pointer. Except. Yeah, okay. Okay, so here are the connected part, and now I have, if you want to play a little bit more, here is the connected 6-point function is given at first order. The first non-trivial order is given by this diagram, which looks like a tree, and in fact you have 20, because of course you can make permutation of this. You can connect all the external points in different ways, so in fact you have 20 of such diagrams. And at order 2, here are the diagrams you can have. This one with three vertex, this one, this one, this one. And if you look at, so all those diagrams are connected. And if you look at what are the irreducible part of these diagrams, here are the vertex. This one loop diagram, this one loop diagram, these diagrams we met already in the 4-point function, and here is a new irreducible diagram which appear only at order 6. You see? So, okay. And so you may be interested into what is the structure of the diagram which are the irreducible part. So you can define now, instead of connected function, you can define what are irreducible functions. Okay. So what are the irreducible vacuum diagrams? In the phi force theory, in fact, all the irreducible diagrams are also the connected vacuum diagrams. So there are no difference in the phi force theory between the connected vacuum diagrams and the irreducible vacuum diagrams. Okay, and here are the symmetry factor, and here are the factors. For the 2-point function, it's different because here is the sum of the irreducible 2-point function. And the irreducible function, in fact, turns out if you sum all the diagrams of the irreducible 2-point diagrams, you get, in fact, the inverse in terms of. Remember that the 2-point function can be considered as a kernel of an operator. It's an integral kernel of an operator. So you may consider what is the integral kernel of the inverse of this operator. It turns out that the integral kernel of the inverse of the 2-point function is given by the sum of all the irreducible diagrams. So up to this term that I will discuss later, which is, in fact, this term is just the inverse of the propagator of the free theory, and then you get the inverse of the propagator of the theory, so namely it's a differential operator. And then you get the sum of all the irreducible diagrams. Okay? Now, if you go into the irreducible 4-point function, the irreducible 4-point function is given by just a single vertex. I will explain a bit later what are those legs. And then it's given by, it means simply that you have removed those legs and you are considering just the vertex. And these diagrams, and you have three different kinds of diagrams coming by the perturbation of the vertex. And if you consider the irreducible 6-point function at order G3, you have only one diagram, and you have 15 different ways to combine it. Okay? Okay, so you see that in general, perturbation theory, if you apply this theorem, involves diagrams. So integrals, which are represented by diagrams, those integrals are represented by diagrams. And then among those integrals, a simple class of diagrams is given by the connected diagrams. And out of the connected diagrams, you can reconstruct what corresponds to all the diagrams. And inside the connected diagrams, there is subclass of contribution, which comes from irreducible diagrams, where you have less and less diagrams. Irreducible, I mean one particle irreducible diagrams. So there is a lot of structure in this Feynman representation in terms of Feynman diagrams of the perturbation theory of an interacting quantum field theory. Okay? And in fact, you can go on. In fact, people are considering in many, many problems two particle irreducible diagrams, so diagrams which remain irreducible if you cut two of the internal lines, etc., etc. So, in fact, there is even more structure. But that's beyond the scope of this lecture. Okay, so thank you. And in the remaining part, I want to introduce you now to not only the diagrammatics, but how does the functional integral formalism allow to deal in an easy way with all this? Yes?
Why do you throw away the irreducible diagrams? The non-irreducible diagrams. But we don't actually throw them away.
No. But simply, what I mean is that it's a subclass of diagram, which is simpler. And in fact, if you know what integral corresponds to irreducible diagram, you can reconstruct quite easily the contribution of connected diagrams, because they are built out of irreducible parts connected by single lines.
We'll see that later.
And we'll see that, I hope, a bit later. Okay. So, in fact, it corresponds to a decomposition of the problem. Okay. So, well, I have 20 minutes left. So, let me just introduce you to okay, so up to now, I applied the Wick theorem to the 5-4 theory, and that's something which is not at all different from what you have been doing or what you could do in the canonical formalism, you see. So nothing, there is nothing special in what I explained and in all those nice pictures. There is no difference between what we can do in the canonical formalism and what you can do using the functional integral formalism. It's just two different ways to construct and to compute the same physical object, which are the correlation function or the vacuum expectation value in the vacuum of products of operators in a quantum theory. Okay? So, now, but is functional integral formalism more interesting than that? For doing calculation. Because otherwise, if the functional integral formalism would be just another way to derive the Wick theorem, it's not really very interesting. So, and the answer is, in fact, it's more powerful, because, and this is basically what I want to explain by using the fact that you can define what are called generating functionals for the correlation. Functions. Okay. So, remember that in the functional integral formalism, everything boils down to having to compute some complicated integral of the form f n times action. So I'm still working in Euclidean, but because I have no I factor, but you can easily work out what I am doing in Minkowski space without any problem. Okay, so everything boils out to compute functional integral of this form, where S E of phi is the action, the Euclidean action of the theory. Okay. So now let me add to this term a new term, which I called G phi, and where, so remember, phi of x is a, you want a random variable, because we integrate over this random variables, dummy variables. Okay. So I introduce now a new field, G of x, which is a classical fixed field, which I will call a source term, or an external field. Okay, so I modified the action by adding to the origin an action, a field, and of course, G phi is just a compact notation to write d4x g of x phi x. So it's just a compact notation to write that. Okay? Okay, and so if instead of computing a functional integral with exponential of minus 1 over h bar se, I had these terms, now I get something, and instead of having something which is like a partition function, I get a function which depends on g, on the field g. And since g is a classical field, fixed field, so it's a function, so this is z is a functional of g. G is a function. G is a function from m equal r4 onto the real number. And therefore, z is a functional of the function g. Okay? And, well, you can see very easily that, in fact, this function is generating functional. Generating functional for the correlation functions of the field. Because let us consider, in fact, not exactly z of g, but z of g divided by z of 0. The same integral where there is no source term. Okay, and I can call this g of g, if you want. Okay, and expand it into g. So let me expand in term of g. So I expand the term exponential minus 1 over h bar minus g times phi. What do I get? I get sum from n equals 0 to infinity. There is a minus times minus, it's a plus. There is a 1 over h bar, so I get first a 1 over factorial n because I have an exponential. I have a h bar up to the power minus n, okay? And then I have, what do I have? I have simply integral over dz1 dzn, g of zn, and then I have the functional integral of exponential minus 1 over h bar se of phi times phi of z1, phi of zn, so divided by the same thing with no z. So finally, what do I have? I have phi of z1, phi of zn, where this is simply the correlation function, or the Green function, correlation function of the interacting theory, okay? So, considering this functional z of g is just a compact way to gather in a single object all the correlation function of the theory for an arbitrary number of field at an arbitrary number of positions. So at the moment, it's still formal, but it's just a compact. I have constructed an object by this functional integral, which contains all the correlation function of the interacting theory. You see? And I integrate, of course, over M, over each point of this theory. And in other way, remember, in the second tutorial, you have started to get used with the concept of functional derivative. Another way to state the same thing is to simply say that if I want to compute the correlation function between n field operators at n different locations of the point, what I have to do is to compute. So then there will be a factor h bar to the power n. And then you have to take the functional derivative of this object g, this functional g of g, at with respect to g, the source term at point g1, and you take n functional derivative at point zn, and at the end you set g equal to 0. So where this is a functional derivative. So here is an integral representation of the relation between z of g and the correlation function of the interacting theory. And here is the same relation, but written in a differential form. The correlation function of the product of n operators in the quantum theory is given by the functional derivative of order n of this generating function. So you have a very compact way to write mathematically what are the correlation functions of the quantum theory. See? Okay. So now here comes the nice aspect of this theory. First, let me consider another generating functional, which is simply what I will call W of G, which is simply the logarithm of this functional V of G. Okay? And, okay, for some reason, I will multiply it by H bar. Okay? So, now you can do the same thing. Okay. You can either expand W of G in power of G or take functional derivative of G. So let me do it the same second way. Let me compute the functional derivative with respect of G to the power Z1 times the functional derivative of G to the power Zn of this function W of G at G equals 0. Okay? And I will multiply by an h bar to the power n because there was an h bar to the power n in. And since I have multiplied W of G by h bar, I will divide it by h bar here. And I get something. Okay? I get some function of the points. What is this function? In fact, it turns out, and I will explain why it works like that later. This is simply, in fact, the correlation function of the phi operators. It's almost the same thing that it's done, except that it's the connected correlation function. So therefore, it's the contribution to this correlation function of the quantum theory simply given by the connected diagram. So this is this object. This object you see contains simply it's the sum of all diagrams of the theory, Z of G. If you think now in terms, if you want to expand it both in G and in the coupling constant, play the same game that what I did it. This object contains the sum of all diagrams of the COE with a factor G per vertex and a factor G per external legs. You see, basically, the term of order G to the power K and G and to the power N gives him P, all the sum of all diagrams with K internal vertex, K 5 to the 4, and N external legs. You see? Okay? And what this states is that this is simply given. This gives you, and of course there is a factor here, h bar to the power minus n minus k, because there is a factor 1 over h bar per factor g and 1 over h bar per factor per coupling constant. Okay? And here, oh, it's slightly different, it's slightly more complicated, so I will come to that later. Okay, and so simply this says that if you take the logarithm of that, you get simply the sum over all connected diagrams. Okay, with a factor g to the power k, chi to the power n. Okay, so this functional contains the contribution of all the connected diagrams of the series. And that's simply because it is the logarithm of an exponential. Okay? And
I don't think I have time to think about the
to explain things about the effective action. So I will just discuss that a little bit more. Why is it given by that? Why is there a relation between the connected correlation functions and the it's simply that if you think about a sum over all diagrams, so consider that G of G, if I expand it in terms of connected diagram, first it is given by a factor which is just 1, okay? Because when you expand an exponential, the first term of the exponential is 1. So there is something which is 1. And then you get a sum of contribution about all connected diagrams, okay, with G factor attached here. Okay, so you have a G attached to any external legs. Okay. And then you have the contribution of the diagrams which contains two connected parts. Okay, and then you have a sum of the contribution between the diagrams which contains three connected parts. Okay, etc. So this is a connected diagram, 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 this is a connected diagram. So we see plus etc. So this object contains the sum over all the diagrams of the theory, and I regroup this sum over all the diagrams into a contribution of the sum of all connected diagrams, of all diagrams which contained two connected parts, of all diagrams which contained three connected parts, etc. Okay, but those diagrams come out, remember, with symmetry factor. And if you work a little bit about the symmetry factor, since they have a symmetry group interpretation, you discover that there is a factor 1/2 associated in general to any diagram which is made out of two connected parts, because in fact you can interpret the indices. So there's 1/2 here. Here there is a factor 1/6, etc., which comes from the symmetry factor. And therefore, in fact, if you think a little bit, you can rewrite this as an exponential of the sum of all connected diagrams which is therefore exponential of W of G if I don't pay attention to the h-bar factor. So, in fact, the fact that the sum over all diagrams is the exponential of the sum over all connected diagrams comes simply for simple symmetry. Factor arguments. Okay? And one last thing I want to say, if you give me 2 minutes. No? Yeah, okay, so I will. Okay, here it was just a choice. So your question is what I wanted to say. I'm allowed to reply. Okay, so now let us think about how many h bar are there in this decomposition. Okay? I consider a diagram here. Okay? Let me consider the contribution of a connected diagrams. Okay? In W with n external legs. External legs, if you want, points. And k internal vertices. Okay. How many h-bar is there in the contribution of this diagram? There is an h-bar to the power minus 1 per g, therefore per external legs. So let me call the number of external legs n. Okay. There is a factor g divided by h-bar per vertex. But now, remember, what is exactly the propagator? The propagator, I draw here, it's h-bar divided by minus Laplacian plus n squared. So there is a factor h-bar per number of lines per propagator. And then there is a plus one since I have chosen to multiply W by h bar. Okay. So here is the total number, the factor of h bar associated in W of G, the sum of connected diagrams. Okay. So now let us compute this. For instance, okay, so here is a simple diagram like that, the propagator. We have n equal 2, k equal 0, number of line equal 1, plus 1, so this is h bar to the power 0. You see? Now, let us compute this diagram. We have n equal 2, one vertex, minus one. 1, 2, 3 lines. One line here, one line here, one line here. Plus one. So this is h bar to the power 1. You see? Let us compute this non-trivial diagram like that. Okay? I have n 2 external points, 2 internal points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines, plus 1. This is h bar to the power 2. You see? Let us play the same role with not a two-point diagram, but a single vacuum diagram, like that. This diagram like that. Remember? Here I have n equals 0, one vertex, two lines, plus 1, equal h bar to the power 2. you start to see some similarities. Here you have H0 because it's a diagram with just a single line. Here there is a factor H of 1 and there is one loop. Here there is a factor H2 and there is two loops, if you want, in the diagram. Here you have a factor H2 and you have two loops. And in fact, it's a topological, there is a simple topological theorem which goes back to Euler, I think, as usual with Euler, which is which tells you that in fact this number, you see, number of external legs in the diagrams minus the number of vertices plus the number of lines plus one is the factor H bar is in fact simply the number of internal loops of the diagram. So you see W. So you see that there is a relation between the topology of the Feynman diagram and the order at which you are expanding in power of the coupling constant. So in fact, the moral you have to remember is that perturbation theory, in fact, is a semi-classical, if you want, expansion. The more complicated the diagram you take into account, the higher you go into the quantum regime, and you are probing more and more complex quantum processes in your system. A diagram like that is just your particle moves, emits a particle, and absorbs it. So it's a simple quantum process. Here, the particle emits two particles, not one. They interfere in a quantum way, and then they annihilate each other. So it's a more complicated quantum process of order H bar 2, while this is a single quantum process of order H1. You see? Okay. And I get this result here simply by, you can get this result simply by those kind of manipulation, and not simply by, here I gave an example by manipulating examples, but in fact using correlation generating functional, you can get this result in a very straightforward way for all diagrams. Okay, thank you. And sorry for a bit. Yes?
Just asking why does the time ordering disappear when you go to Euclidean time?
Okay. So that's a different question. I can reply just now. We can discuss that in the coffee because perhaps you are. So, what do you want? Do you prefer me to discuss? What's your opinion? It would take a little time. Pardon?
Yeah, just go.
Okay. So I will try to sleep, to drink a little bit. Simply to the case of quantum mechanics, I think, because that's enough. You agree? Okay. So, in fact, if I consider a quantum mechanical system, in fact, it corresponds simply to having the case where the dimension of space-time is one, so there is time plus no space. Okay. So let me consider, for instance, I'm just considering a functional integral of the form d phi of x naught exponential minus 1 over h bar s e of phi of x naught, where x naught is just another denomination for my Euclidean time. Okay? So when I am considering that, I have to integrate. And if I am computing a correlation function in my theory of phi of x0, phi of y0, okay, what I am doing is that I am considering this functional integral, d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s e of phi times phi of x1, 0, phi of x2. Okay? Sorry. Okay? And you see that in this integral, the ordering doesn't play any role because I am integrating, so let me, here is tau equal x naught, okay? I am integrating over field configuration, and here is, for instance, here is x1, the first time, here is x2, okay? Now, if I do a Vic rotation, that's something I already explained. If I do a Vic rotation, okay, what I am doing is that I am going from this time in the complex plane to this time. So I am assuming that I am rewriting x equal I time. Okay, and therefore, when I make this big rotation, this is now time, and this was Euclidean time. X1 becomes I t1, x2 becomes I t2, and because I'm rotating both things at the same time, okay, and therefore my functional integral becomes integral d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar, s e of phi, s of phi, I'm sorry, there is now an I over h bar, times phi of t1, phi of t2. Okay? So, now I can decompose this functional integration into this functional, this path integral into three parts. First, the integral for time here less than t1. Second, the functional integral for times t in between t1 and t2. And then, time integral for times t larger than t2. Okay? So, the first integral here will give me an evolution operator between the vacuum state u of t1 and then a phi operator for t1 according to the rule of path integral formulation. Now I have phi of t1, so I insert the operator phi. Now, the path integral from this time to this time will give me an evolution operator u from t1 to t2, so it's u of t2 minus t1. Then I multiply by phi, so I have a phi operator. And then I have an operator u of t2, so t1, u of minus t2, and I project on the vacuum, you see? So this is a way to represent this in Schrödinger, in the Schrödinger representation. I go back to what I did just at the beginning of what you have seen with Bell-Schumacher. So, but if you think about it in terms of Heisenberg representation, the Heisenberg picture, this is a phi of t2 phi of t1, 0. You see? And that's simply because, but that's true provided, of course, that t1 is less than t2, namely than x1 is less than x2, or if you prefer, that the Euclidean time tau 1 is less than the Euclidean time tau 2. You see, I have implicitly assumed that I'm doing that. If I was doing the same thing, the same calculation, assuming that now x1, x2 was smaller than x1, because this is the Euclidean time, so, and when I make my Greek rotation, then I get here t2, then I get t1, then I can make the same decomposition into those three steps of my past integral formulation. First, I have to let the system evolve up to time t2, then I apply an operator phi, then my system evolves from time t2 to time t1, then I apply another operator phi, then my system evolves up to the vacuum, and therefore I get in this case, if t1 is larger than t2, what I get by the same calculation is the matrix element between phi of t2, phi of t1, 0. And therefore, I start from something I can compute in the Euclidean regime where the order doesn't make sense because I'm computing really an expectation value of random variables. And simply when I go back to Euclidean time, I realize that if t1 is less than t2, I get this. If t1 is larger than t2, I get this. Which is therefore it's a proper definition that whatever t1 is with respect to t2, what I get is the matrix element phi of t1, phi of t2, 0. Yes, t1, t2, or t1. Oh, I'm sorry. T2, T1. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. Yeah, okay. So here I get phi T, first phi T1, then phi T2. Here I get first phi T2, then phi T1. And in any case, this is both things are equal to this order. Okay, and so I did it just for one dimension of time, but you can repeat this operation, adding a third dimension, which is real space, because all those manipulations do not involve any analytic continuation in time, in space. Okay. You see? Okay. So I hope it's clear. Once you have understood, it's clear, it's easy. But you are right to ask questions because it's. It's a bit delicate. Okay. So, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yes?
This thing plugs into your USB port.
Yes.
And then you can use this to go.
Oh, I can. I will